That's the people that are just like, you know, overwhelmed with depression or just feeling numb or flat. That's the part of the nervous system where, yeah, it's like, I can't fight this. I can't flee this. I got to go shut down. That's my last line of defense kind of thing. So a lot of our work lies in A, understanding this as it relates to who we are and how we kind of move through the world. I would be a person that classically for decades was dysregulated towards a more hyper aroused state where anxiety fueled me, fear fueled me, hypervigilance, things like that for a lot of different reasons. And so a lot of my work has been trying to come back into that window of tolerance, if you will, that optimal zone. It's that zone of our nervous system where we feel really connected. We feel really grounded. We feel safe and secure and all of the things.
Welcome to Make Bank with Marie Wold. I'm Marie, and for the last decade, I've been helping women set and hit unrealistic goals while building their definition of a rich life. This podcast is your ultimate destination for unfiltered discussions about personal development, entrepreneurship, wellness, confidence, wealth building, relationships, and so much more. We're creating our dream lives together, and I'm so glad you're here. Now let's jump into today's episode. Welcome, welcome back to the pod. I am so glad you're here, and we have a super juicy, valuable, probably going to get a little bit vulnerable of a conversation today because we are talking about overthinking. We're talking about anxiety, which if you have been a listener of the show, you know that is something I have lots of experience with. We're talking about overachievers. We're talking about the quote unquote myth of laziness. And we have so much good stuff to get into with Dr. Kelly Vincent, who is here with me. She is a licensed clinical psychologist and owner of Nourish Wellness Group, a holistic mental health group practice in California. She's passionate about integrating the mind and body in clinical treatment, thus utilizing a variety of modalities such as EMDR, yoga therapy, walk talk therapy, somatic experience, nervous system education. And she specializes in working with women who struggle with trauma, anxiety, depression, self-esteem, and imposter syndrome. Loves working with women of all ages, especially 20-somethings, my female entrepreneurs, my moms, and Dr. Vincent is a certified gentle and restorative yoga teacher as well, and author. She has so much going on, and she is such a wealth of knowledge, so I'm super excited to welcome her to the show. Hello, Dr. Kelly.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I am so excited, and I honestly had a hard time, like, deciding where I even wanted to take this conversation because you are such a wealth of knowledge and so much of what you do resonates with me on such a personal level. So it's like where I even wanted to dive in. Yeah, exactly. But I'm really curious to start off, like, how you got drawn to this specific niche of psychology and this niche of helping and healing women, because in my experience, we often do the work that we needed the most. So I'm really curious how you found your way to this specific niche.
Yes, yes. So I'll try to condense the story because it's a story. But sure. There's always a backstory. I originally was in digital marketing. So my undergrad was in marketing. I went into the marketing world, moved to LA, did the whole thing out of college, was for network TV buying. I was working for Lionsgate, worked for Sephora, blah, blah, blah. And then probably it was like 25-ish. So I call it my quarter life crisis, where it was just this like very intense, overwhelming feeling of, I don't belong here. I didn't belong. It wasn't a belonging thing. It was more just like, it just didn't align. It just didn't feel like it feels as it relates to the rest of my life. So fast forward, I ended up having, this is a whole nother story, which is a fun story looking back, but had an experience where I essentially walked out of my job. And let's be clear, I am a rule follower. I am a people pleaser, or I was, high functioning anxiety type gal. So that was very out of character, but it was just this visceral feeling. Anyways, it led me to going back to school. I decided to just go for it, get my doctorate, because I always did, you know, hearing stories, understanding how people worked, understanding why they worked the way that they worked, right? Like, I always had a curiosity.
There's a lot of overlap with that in marketing as well. Wanting to understand how people tick. Yeah.
I know, which is kind of funny because I always thought it was a deficit when I was going into grad school. And now looking back, it's been such a value add as it relates to even my businesses and starting my practice and things like that and understanding people. But anyway, so I was gravitating towards therapy and being a therapist because it just, again, the idea of helping others, the idea of understanding others, helping them peel back, you know, the layers, you know, understanding the puzzle, that was always very interesting. And I think over time, as it relates to these niches that have developed, it was very organic. Back in grad school, you know, they make you do this massive thing called dissertation. It's just this beast of a project. And essentially my dissertation, I was interested in the integration of exercise in therapy. So I did the qualitative study interviewing a bunch of therapists who were doing it because I just felt like it just was obvious to me that the mind and the body were connected. Makes sense that it was all just from the neck up because I felt so much in my body. So at the time, I mean, anxiety, generalized anxiety was my bestie, was just there. Just hanging with me all day, every day. And I felt it so physically. So that got me very interested in the body piece and understanding the body. And I think over time, yeah, you see little bits and parts of your story in who you want to then support and who you then want to help. And I think I started, you know, back in, I think it was my postdoc when I started the Instagram, which I did not think was going to be part of my business or the world or, you know, my world of therapy, but it has. And I think so many women started to really relate with the things that I was putting out there around high functioning anxiety, imposter syndrome, just anxiety in general, nervous system stuff got a lot of big, you know, responses because they felt it. They had similar experiences. So I think over time, it just started to develop where as I was on my own journey and as I was healing and shedding and deprogramming and doing all the things for my own personal self, it made me feel more confident and more, you know, grounded in wanting to then help others who were, you know, maybe at a little bit of their starting point as it relates to their. So yeah, it was very organic and over time and kind of unfolded it in different ways for different reasons.
Yeah. So going into your journey, I really want to dig into the decision to just break the path, break the status quo, because you said you were quite a rule follower. So I'm sure there was like a lot of bravery and maybe deprogramming that needed to happen for you to completely pivot. What was that like? How did you kind of walk yourself through that? I don't know, maybe it was like first you had to admit to yourself that like, this was not it anymore. Like, how did you know that you wanted something different?
It's so wild. It's such a good question. And I don't even know if I've had really space to even think about those pieces. But I would say it's definitely a flurry. And I think it was just that gut feeling, that gut intuition of like, this, no, I cannot do this for the rest of my life. This is not what I want to be doing. I never wanted to be my boss. And so honestly, I think a bigger part of the anxiety I experienced was this sense of urgency. And my big coping skill is control. If I can control it, then I feel safer. And so control then came with being very action oriented. So honestly, I think a lot of the panic and anxiety about not being in the right career then fueled me to figure it out and make a decision. So I don't know if I was super intentional at the time and really thinking it through the way that I probably should have. It was probably more anxiety induced decisions. Thank goodness it worked out and it worked out beyond, you know, my dreams of it working out. But I think at the time I couldn't deny it. I could not think about it or address it or try to figure out like an alternative path because it just didn't feel right. But there's a lot of layers and roots around, you know, my upbringing of, you know, do a career that you love and, you know, all the things. I don't know. That's a whole nother podcast probably.
But
I think it was just a bit of a knowing and then just taking the leap. And I had so many people be like, what are you doing? Go back and be
Because then committing to getting like a PhD, like that is a huge undertaking.
Totally. Well, and then again, that just kind of showed a lot of like who I was even at that time. It was like, well, if I'm going to do it, then I'm going to do it big and I'm going to do it perfectly and I'm going to do the whole thing. And I was, again, I'm very grateful that I did now, but still like at the time I could have probably done another route that was less school, less intense and all the things, but I'm grateful, you know, there's a lot of, you know, good things, but yeah, I think it was some of those isms that I had kind of in my own experiences and all the wounding that I was trying to work through that then caused me to, you know, make these different decisions and these different jumps. And it did work out. But yeah, these days I do it a little bit more intentionally if I'm going to shake up my life and turn it upside down.
Just burn it all down.
I mean, I tend to do that.
Yeah, I can relate to that. Once I've made a decision, once I've decided that it's a different path, there's no looking back.
No stopping.
Like, it is just complete
laser focus.
Skirt. Yeah. Hard pivot. So for the person who, you know, I have a ton of big dreamers in my audience. So if the person who is listening to this right now has that kind of feeling of, I don't think the path I'm on is it. I think there's something more for me. There's something more aligned. There's something more fulfilling. There's something more abundant, whatever. What would be your advice to them now looking back? Like, yeah. What do you think is an ideal process or way to think about this that would have served you?
Yeah. And I think so much of it is it's gonna come with fear, right? Yeah. It's going to come with fear because it's the unknown and the brain doesn't mm-hmm. like the unknown. The nervous system doesn't even like the unknown, right? So we almost have to assume that we're going to have to work through some deeper layers of fear of what that change looks like, right?
Yeah.
So, and I think for me, it's hard because at the time I was in my 20s, right? No. So I went back to school 27. I didn't have any kids right now. I have two kids now. I wasn't married. I was dating my now husband. But so there was less pressure than mm-hmm. I think if you are maybe older and supporting your family and things like that. But I do think it can be very beyond worth it on so many levels to take that risk, to take that mm-hmm. jump. It can be thought out and it can be intentional and it can be planned of how to support yourself when you're taking that risk, but it's going to come with sacrifice. It's mm-hmm. going to come with fear, and that's just part of the human experience. So I think for anyone that is really thinking about and knowing that you are not meant to be wherever it is that you're meant to be, A, just normalize that. Let's say that first. I think mm-hmm. most of us don't know where we want to be at age, you know, 22, and we're supposed to pick a career path and stay course, right? Yep. Knowing that like change and evolution of yourself and your essence is going to happen. So it's just very normal. And then I think the second piece is being as intentional as you can be, which means try to get yourself grounded. Try to create some space to think it through, either through journaling or, you know, go to therapy or talk with a trusted friend. Like really kind of think through what's happening and what it is that you're wanting, what values are not being met, what needs are not being met, and then where you maybe see yourself and how that could happen and how you could kind of make that happen, given even, you know, everything that's going on in your life. And everybody's very different and their situations are different, but it is worth it. It's beyond.
Yeah. Yeah.
Find it.
Yeah. And I think for me, like my experience of that was leaving college and immediately just like jumping into entrepreneurship. I had been doing it as like my side hustle, and I turned down the full-time marketing job right out of college that I had been like literally working towards for years. And I had seen myself with the closet full of J. Crew and like climbing the corporate ladder and all of that stuff. And then when it came time to sign the job offer, I was just like, I cannot, I can't do this. And everyone was like, are you sure? But it was that knowing, and it was terrifying, but I think the trusting yourself to figure it out is a huge part of it too.
Yes. And I love how you also bring up the body piece, right? Like the body, you like made a reaction of like just clenching, the like gripping. And your body does tend to tell us so much if we're paying attention. And if we're not paying attention, and then screams at us, right? And there's sometimes we don't know why we're making a decision, right? The mind hasn't caught up with just the knowing that you're experiencing in the body, which is why I think with so many women that I work with, right? A lot of the high functioning anxiety women, the ambitious women, all the things, slowing down is the biggest part of the healing process. And just slowing down to understand yourself is often what we need, but we tend to not be slow, especially in this modern world that we live in. So that's a whole nother topic, but yeah.
Yeah. So when it comes to dropping into our body and actually listening to our body, I think that's something that is always an effort, or like it has to be like a conscious choice for me. And I think that's probably true for a lot of people. Correct me if I'm wrong, but like my default mode is to live in my head all the time 100%. And just think through everything. And I think so many women excel with their ability to problem solve and think through things, and their genius minds get them so far, but then it becomes this double-edged sword, speaking for myself, where we're like doing so much thinking and not enough feeling. So where do you see that coming up either in your journey or in your practice? What does that look like? How do we know that's happening? Why is it holding us back?
Yeah. And yes, you're not alone. you're not alone. And I've worked on even this in my own journey for decades at this point. And yes, work with a lot of women on it because it's not necessarily a bad thing, right? Yeah. Like, we're thinking through things, we're problem solving, we're very action oriented, we get shit done, right? Mm-hmm. And we figure things out and we evolve and we grow and all the things. It can be a really good thing. But yes, when we're living too much from the neck up, we're very much sort of being, you know, a sense of disconnection kind of innately happens because there is so much going on in the body. But what I'll say too, just about overthinking, is that often it's actually can be a very helpful coping skill, especially if you have anxiety tied with the overthinking and the rumination, because it's almost sort of this false sense of control. It's this illusion of, you know, figuring something out that might feel overwhelming. So we have to kind of just, the self-compassion for why we're doing something that we're doing is huge. And then seeing the kind of and, it can be really helpful and it can also be really not so helpful. I feel like I just want to put that out there because we don't want to demonize any coping skills because they were adaptive at one time or they can be adaptive at a time. But when we start to see ourselves just sort of not being able to turn it off, right? Mm-hmm. Just this incessant thinking or trying to problem solve when you can't solve the problem or trying to control everything, that's where we then going to get into a bit of a hot water and our nervous system starts to get super dysregulated and it's not necessarily a good thing. So the idea of listening to our bodies too, we don't get taught that oftentimes. Mm-hmm. Most people don't. Not that. The idea of even understanding what sensations are going on and why is it that they're happening, the idea of the nervous system and why the nervous system is reacting the way that it's reacting, we don't get taught. So I think most of us, it is a brand new skill that you have to intentionally begin to integrate into your day-to-day, even hour-to-hour lifestyle so that you can start to feel more of that embodiment. And I think everyone is different in how you do that and what, you know, what things work for you. Something like yoga, right? Like, some people might just latch onto that experience and feel so connected to it and so embodied when they're doing it. And then other people might not, right? They might in their head, they can't drop in there where they might need to do sort of like initial sort of gentle, say, body scans of just noticing sitting there, noticing your seat on the chair, even just those small little cues, even though it seems so like minute and not super impactful, it builds in those new neural networks of being able to kind of be in your physical skin a little bit differently than when you're not thinking about it. So embodiment and somatic work and all those things, it's such a skill, it's such a practice. And I think anybody that's super highly ambitious, super high achieving, we tend again to be going at rapid speed and we tend to be living in our heads most of the day. So slowing it down and taking notice and just being aware is usually those first steps to start to bridge the gap between the mind and the body.
Yeah. And just like being present to the moment can be so hard sometimes. Like sometimes I'll be, you know, eating dinner with my husband or whatever, and I'll start thinking of like a work thing or whatever. Like my brain just goes 100 miles an hour into another direction. And I must just, like, my eyes must just glaze over because he's like, where did you go? Like, what just happened? I'm like, I went down a rabbit hole. Like, I'm back. But it's like my That's So Raven moment of like, boom. And I'm just gone. Yeah. And so it's not great, like in those situations, because I want to be present with my husband or I want to be like on the dog walk or whatever it is.
Yeah. And it really, the intentionality, right? I'm probably going to say that word a zillion times, but again, it's one of those things where working to build a new neural pathway, because your neural pathway might be very well defined to kind of go into that intellectualizing mode or just go into that thinking mode to kind of explore. Maybe also too, you're just excited and you're a person and things light you up and it's something you're passionate about. So it also just might be just an area of interest that also kind of gets you going. Again, not necessarily a bad thing, but when we start to notice, you know, impacting our relationships, impacting our ability to rest and have really restorative rest, that's when that like intention and sort of like almost kind of, this sounds a little aggressive, I don't like this word, but like forcing the brain to just kind of be in that space, be in that moment. And that takes so much practice because there's distractions everywhere. This modern world is not set up for us to be intentionally slow and gentle and calm.
Yeah, I even had to set this thing up on my phone, and maybe you recommend this to your clients, but it's called OneSec, and it's this app that forces you to do like a mindfulness exercise before you open social media, because why do I need to open social media at a red light? I absolutely don't. Why do I need to open social media like to, you know, walk across my house or just like, fill a space in my day? Like, I just don't. And it forces you to like actually be mindful of why am I opening this right now? And it like breaks that immediate kind of impulse. And that has taught me so, like, it has shown me, I've had it maybe for a year now, and it's just shown me how much that was ingrained into my response and how much I was unwilling to just sit and sit in my brain, sit in my body for any amount of time. It's crazy. Yeah.
What was the app again? I do know of them, but I always look for good ones.
This one is called One Sec.
One Sec. Okay. Yeah. The other thing, just to piggyback off that, if we go into kind of the world of like dopamine hits, right? Mm-hmm. So this idea of, like, you know, there's all different things kind of coming out around this idea of a little bit like addicted to the dopamine, and dopamine is that reward or whatnot that we get, rushes of when we get something exciting or, you know, whatever. So we're also, I think all of us are starting to become a little addicted to the dopamine, and that's causing us to, you know, not necessarily really experience that authentic, genuine happiness of being content, being grounded, being still, all of those things, or just noticing the world and noticing a pretty flower as you walk by, because we're just so in that instant gratification loop constantly. Mm-hmm. And social media, it is a dopamine hit, right?
Like,
you have a message in there or whatever. But yeah, that's why intentionality, and sometimes we have to, you know, put another app in there to be more intentional.
Yeah.
More aware and slow down, because it is pretty impulsive, or it can become impulsive, because we're just sort of, you know, operating the same way over and over.
Yeah. And we make those pathways, like you said. Can you explain more of what that means? Like how we develop kind of defined pathways and what it means to create a new one, if someone's not familiar with that?
Yeah. So this is a neuroscience world and uber my specialty, but I do kind of work with a lot of the idea of neuroplasticity, right? So the things that we do repeatedly over and over create these neural pathways, because then the brain's like, oh, this is how we do this, and this is how we're gonna, you know, accomplish that, because it's getting its data from the experiences you've had previously to then kind of inform future experiences, right? So anything that's repeatable behavior is going to create these really well-defined neural pathways. Some of them can be really adaptive and really healthy and really wonderful, and other of them can be not so great long-term or not sustainable. So when we're trying to add in maybe a new habit or a new behavior or a new experience, we're essentially creating a new neural pathway where the brain's, oh, we can do it this way. Oh, this is really helpful, or oh, this feels really good. But when it's only happening here and there, it's not as well-defined, right? The brain's not going to, it's not a slippery slope, right? Versus the really well-defined ones. So you have to kind of keep doing it, keep repeating it over and over for that neuroplasticity to kind of shape and form to create that new habit, if you will. It's the same thing with going into a gym. You know you're not going to walk out with six pack, you know, day one, right?
Yeah.
You know, to build those muscles over time. So it's very similar with our brain and our wiring and kind of how we move through the world, is we have to kind of, that repetitive nature then becomes sort of second nature and becomes we default to. But it can be hard, right? Because I think some of the neural pathways that we all have really well defined are just sort of like the low hanging fruit.
They're
easy, again, instant gratification ones. And sometimes they feel really good in the short term, but then in the long term, not so much. So it's kind of fighting a little bit with your own.
Yeah. Design. And it feels like, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that it feels, when you're trying to create a new pathway, it feels kind of unnatural. You're kind of writing with your left hand, or you're like trying to retrain the way that you, if we go with the gym analogy, the way that you squat. And so like when you first do it, it's going to, you have to think through every cue of how you go down and how you stand back up. And then once you learn it, it's, you're just in the groove and like knocking it out.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we've all had experiences of that where we've didn't know how to do something. And then all, you know, after repetitive, you know, consistency, it becomes then second nature. Even that idea of like muscle memory, right? And I don't, you know actually the origins of that, but it's similar to that, where it's like this muscle memory starts to become a little tangible.
Yeah. And then the same thing applies to, I used to be a fitness coach, but the same thing applies to like your motor skills. Like you kind of get into a groove of doing things one way. And so people get into really deep grooves of like using the wrong form, let's say, which would be maybe a maladaptive like pathway equivalent. And then to retrain your form, like it literally feels like you're trying to learn how to write with your left hand at first, because it's just so uncomfortable and feels unnatural, but it, even though it's the right way, or even though that serves you better. Yeah.
Totally. And yeah, just to add on just another piece of that, again, going back to the brain and it liking the familiar. Right? That anything unfamiliar, or unknown is a little bit threatening, right? Or it can pose a threat to us. And so it doesn't like that, doesn't want to do that, even though we know that this thing that we're doing, this, you know, not great coping skill, is not really serving us in the long run, but it feels safer, right? Because it's all about safety. And also with the nervous system, I mean, its whole job is either protection or connection, right? And anything that feels like it needs to protect us from, it will then kick into gear that like, oh, this is unfamiliar, this is unsafe, like abort, you know, don't do that.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's really working, you know, with our own brains and how we're wired and all the things.
It's so interesting. I definitely understand why this became your next path, because I'm just so fascinated by like human behavior and the science behind it all. There's endless rabbit holes here.
Oh my gosh, endless. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So next rabbit hole, I think you brought up the nervous system and how, you know, we're responding and protecting certain things and how our nervous system is reacting to things. And you made some content recently kind of challenging the concept of laziness and how what we can perceive as laziness is actually like a nervous system response. Can you go more into that? Because that was like such a kind of light bulb for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it for so many, I feel like. But yeah, I feel like when you start to understand what's happening from the inside out, you get way more context and insight into your experience in general. So yeah, so what might people see as lazy might truly be just a shutdown response of your nervous system, where it's like, I can't, I'm done, I surrender, I'm just going to kind of, you know, zone out or whatever it is that you do. And of course, you know, sometimes we just need to be lazy because we haven't had enough restorative rest or whatever. Lazy necessarily isn't always bad. But yeah, with the nervous system, I think it's about really understanding what your default state is. We could probably do an entire podcast on the nervous system. So I'll just try to kind of succinctly summarize what I do a lot with clients, but we do a lot of like nervous system mapping to try to understand where it is that their nervous system is habituated towards. And there's a lot of reasons for how your nervous system is habituated. Your childhood, traumas, modeling from caregivers, your attachment style. There's a lot of roots to understand. But essentially, our nervous system, and we're talking about the autonomic nervous system, which is sort of the part of us that's very, you know, handles the unconscious processes, if you will, of like digestion or heart rate or whatever. But really, again, I think I mentioned this a second ago, it's really focused on service of survival, in service of survival. So protection or connection. And so what we're talking about with autonomic nervous system is the sympathetic nervous system, the fight flight, and then the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the rest and digest. And then there's another pathway, which is through the vagus nerve, is that shutdown, that freeze, that like what they call dorsal vagal part of our nervous system. So we tend to oscillate between these different states. And more specifically, another way to visualize it is there's that hypoarousal state, which is the fight flight, the anxiety. That's where my high functioning anxiety folks live, is that hyperarousal go do. And then on the very kind of think of a, you know, I'm describing a window of tolerance, but then on the bottom of it is the hypoarousal. So that's the shutdown. That's the like the lazy, and I'm putting that in air quotes. That's the people that are just like, you know, overwhelmed with depression or just feeling numb or flat. That's the part of the nervous system where, yeah, it's I can't fight this. I can't flee this. I got to go shut down. That's my last line of defense kind of thing. So a lot of our work lies in A, understanding this as it relates to who we are and how we kind of move through the world. I would be a person that classically for decades was dysregulated towards a more hyper aroused state where anxiety fueled me, fear fueled me, hypervigilance, things like that for a lot of different reasons. And so a lot of my work has been trying to come back into that window of tolerance, if you will, that optimal zone. It's that zone of our nervous system where we feel really connected. We feel really grounded. We feel safe and secure and all of the things. So yeah. And then I think too, just to really hone in on this piece of it, our goal is to not always be regulated because we need our nervous system to respond to threats and danger in our environment, you know, in relationships, you know, all the things. But what we need to do is create a nervous system that's more flexible and more resilient and widen the window of our toleration of these stressors. But to circle all the way back around, a lot of us are just moving through the world with these nervous system responses and we're super unaware of it, right?
Yeah.
Realize that, oh, wait, we're in a fight response because we just got triggered because someone just made our shame monster come alive or someone made us feel like we weren't enough and we didn't feel enough because our dad was super critical, right? Like sometimes we just don't know what's lurking under the surface and we're just responding in the ways that we are. But when we get really tapped into those responses and why they're doing what they're doing, it you feel like you have so much more control over the, you know, both body and mind experience of it. So That was a very condensed version of such a big topic, but
yeah, there's so much here. Have you ever seen the meme that's like, how do I tell my brain that I'm just sending an email, not fighting for my life, or like something like that?
It's so true. Yeah. It is true in the sense of going back to what you originally asked about the lazy part. It's yeah, that most likely is potentially a person who is stuck in freeze mode or who's habituated more towards freeze mode and doesn't know what to do. They're feeling really overwhelmed or they're triggered of their worthiness or their lovability or whatever. They might just shut down because that's the safest place to go. Or it might be avoidance too, right? Laziness.
This concept rocked my world when I first heard it, because I definitely tend towards the hyper arousal and just going and doing and thinking. And I personally have been diagnosed with generalized anxiety in the past. And so that's just became my natural habitat. And then I hit kind of burnout and experienced freeze and started feeling like so lazy, and my, you know, internal take and like internal dialogue about the quote unquote laziness was so unhelpful because I didn't understand what was happening. Yes. And I tried to just apply more pressure and more pressure because historically that's what got me, you know, taking action. And then finally I was like, oh, I've just been making this so much worse.
And you're doing the best you could with the skills you have. Time, right? Yeah. I mean, the body will just take over and just be like, nope, we're not doing that. We're not doing that today. We're going to stay right here.
Yeah. I literally had nothing left. They're continuing to push through was not an option. So
if you think about it too, when we're stuck, right? That's where the struggle comes, is when we get stuck on or we get stuck off. And when we're stuck on, we are flooding our bodies in our minds with stress hormones, cortisol, adrenaline, epinephrine. We're not meant to be flooding ourselves. We're meant to flood ourselves when we need to take action and get out of the danger and, you know, respond to the danger. But when the danger's over, we're supposed to come back in that window of tolerance and get more regulated. But what's happening is so many of us in the world that we're living in and not being aware of all of this, we're just staying there, like cycling over and over. Hence burnout, right? Yeah. Hence the system is like, no thank you, or it starts screaming at you like with digestive problems or autoimmune issues or chronic pain, like all kinds of things. And we don't realize that it's, you know, potentially one of the biggest roots can be nervous system dysregulation and a lack of addressing some of those wounding that you've had in your past or traumas or things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So if someone's now listening and they're having their light bulb moment, they're like, oh, that is me. I have lived that. What are some ways that we can improve our tolerance or improve our ability to come down into that window when we're recognizing, like, okay, I'm up here. I don't need to be up here.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, the first work that, you know, the first line of approach that I use with all of my clients or anybody that's in this experience is the awareness part. Like, we have to be aware of what is going on inside our bodies and inside our minds before you can make any intentional change, right? Mm-hmm. So learning about the nervous system, learning about the different, you know, responses, learning about your own. What does it look like when you're in a fight response for you? What does it look like when you're in a flee response? And what does it look like when you're in a freeze response? Start mapping out your nervous system. There are ways to like specifically do that. But I think even just asking those simple questions is a great place to start. So awareness is huge, and education.
Yeah.
And then usually my second step is the intentionality, intentional effort, right? So, and as simple as just going slower. Is a way to regulate your nervous system, right?
Simple, but not easy.
Totally. And also slow is scary, right? Yeah. When you start to get more still, if people have been avoiding a lot of their stuff and they've just acted this way or moved through the world in this way for decades, stillness will pose a threat because that's not what your nervous system is committed towards or the brain is familiar with. But even slowness, like how you brush your teeth in the morning, brushing them slowly and taking notice.
My dentist literally had to tell me I needed to like brush my teeth softer because I was like pushing my gums back. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah.
There's that energy and that urgency and that stress, and that's like literally coming through the action of your toothbrush or taking a shower slowly, right? So, and then everybody wants this like big, like interesting, like, this is how you do it. And you know, even more.
What is the 7-step hack?
Exactly. What's the framework? And I think really going back to basics, you know, are you hydrating? Are you moving your body? How are you sleeping? What are you putting in your body as it relates to drink and food? All that stuff. Basics, I think, is a big one. But I think when it comes to other intentional ways to downregulate or upregulate, there's so many. There's so many ways to do that. And I think it's about practicing, or not practicing, but trial and error of what works for you right now. What might work for you now might not work for you later. So it's really about figuring out what helps. Like for me, when I'm in that hyper arousal state, I usually just engage in my senses. So if I want to know that I'm there and I don't want to be there anymore and it's not needed to be there anymore, what do I see around me? What do I hear? What do I feel? What do I smell? What do I taste? Like get myself really immersed in the world around me so that I can get to a place where I'm like, okay, wait, we can slow down. We can downregulate right now. It's safe to do so. Also getting outside, if you're in a place that has sun and you're able to get outside, moving your body is also, of course, very helpful. We all know that with exercise, but even just as a walk, an intentional walk. So no podcasts, no music, just let yourself be, because we want to shift from doing to being. A human doing versus a human being, right? Like we want to get more in that human being part. And that is just intentional effort. And then my like third kind of step, thinking of framework, third little step is the optimization and assessing, right? So you're constantly optimizing and assessing what it is that you're doing for your mind and body. What is it that you're doing for your nervous system? How can you support it more? How can, you know, all the things. And I think it's just a constant evolution. And then to me, it's lifelong. It's this life practice and it's not really overnight situation.
Sure. And like you said, our world is not, the modern era is not conducive to this being easy. So it, I think it makes sense if it feels a bit like an uphill battle or just like a conscious thing that you have to always put an effort for.
It's so true. And I think anything with our health these days, I mean, it's a conscious effort for your physical health and for, you know, diet and all of those things. So I think just mental health for so long just got backburnered. Like it wasn't like necessary to put it at the forefront, and it's, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I think it's just like any of those other things that we do for ourselves. We just have to integrate these practices and these, the intentionality and all the things.
Yeah. You shared this really beautiful 3-minute ritual on Instagram recently. Your 3-minute reset when feeling anxious. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I have all kinds of versions of that. But I think more so of what I'm remembering, it's more like an embodiment practice, right? So
yeah, you said for 1 minute, softening your face, unclenching your jaw. The first minute is just not being tense.
Yes. So yeah, so that first minute is also, and just to kind of add to it, that wasn't in the post, but like the intentionality of being aware of how you're holding your posture and how you're holding yourself. So yes, unclenching your jaw, drop your shoulders, roll them back and away from your ears, lengthen your spine. What is happening in the physical body, and can you work to release and soften? I love the word soften. When every time I think of that word, soften, soften, it can help kind of just sort of dissipate what it is. And it makes sense when it comes with anxiety or in a hyper aroused state that we're going to be tense. We're going to be kind of maybe hunched over because it's a defensive posture that we need in those states. So the more we can be like, wait, a lion's not chasing me right now. I'm good. And I kind of just, and then I'm sure softening your forehead is another place that we tend to kind of cleanse and sort of, you know, tense up. But yeah, softening, I think, is a great one. I forget actually what else I said in that.
Yeah. You were talking about softening the forehead, unclenching the jaw, rolling the shoulders, just like you said, that softening. And then you talked about breathing, hand on heart, hand on belly, breathing for a minute.
Yeah, the self-hold is also a good one. If you put one hand on your forehead and one on the back of your neck and just intentionally work to like deep breath in through your nose and then exhale it out through your mouth, lengthening that exhale. Like, and when we lengthen that exhale, it tends to activate the parasympathetic part of our nervous system, that rest, digest, that more optimal zone. So anything, that you can get into your body in a safe way. And some people, it doesn't feel super safe to be in their body because of the different experiences that they've had. So you have to kind of really dip your toe in some of these somatic practices to see what feels okay right now. Sometimes working with therapists or whatnot to work through some of those layers, depending on what you've been through. But yeah, anything that kind of helps sort of bring you present. So what we're working on is getting really present. We're working on releasing how we're holding our body. And we're working on this intentionality of softening and intentionality of like, how can I, you know, just be versus in this doing mode. But
Sometimes when I'm like, if I notice that I'm feeling anxious, especially if I'm driving or something and I can't just you know, put it down or whatever, I will literally just drive with my hand on my chest and use that as a counterpoint of like, we're breathing, we're here, we're okay. I think sometimes even those small cues can go a long way.
Yeah, because you're cueing to your nervous system that we're actually safe, that there's no danger. Yeah. I love what you just kind of started to tap into is this idea of mantras, right? Mm-hmm. So being able to have a mantra for yourself to remind your nervous system, because it's hearing you, what your mind thinks, your body feels, right? Mm-hmm. So if you start having really stressful thoughts, your nervous system thinks that you're under threat because it can't differentiate between a real threat and a perceived threat. Mm-hmm. So anything you're thinking is a perceived threat, even though there's actually no threat in front of you.
Yeah.
So that self-talk, that self-compassionate talk, that ability to be like, we're safe, we're okay. Actually, today I just posted soothing statements for your nervous system to soothe your nervous system.
So yeah,
I don't know when you'll be listening to this, but it's there.
Yeah, we can link that in the episode description for sure.
Okay, great. But yes, I think self-soothing mantras can be really helpful to remind your brain, remind that emotional center that's being alarmed that, oh wait, no, there's no threat coming. We're good. We're safe. We're just having a moment. We're feeling this anxiety. We're feeling this fear. Naming and noticing the emotion can be really helpful too. But yeah, I think again, like the basics, right? It doesn't seem that impactful and empowering, but it totally can be when you let yourself just kind of work to practice it and build that new neural pathway about this could be something we use as a skill or as a resource.
So. Yeah. Yeah. One thing I want to kind of wrap this all in a bow with is the concept of redefining or choosing a new definition for success, because something that came up for me so much when I first like was aware that all of this existed and was realizing that I was like living in a state of hyper arousal, or if I was like being mean to myself for being lazy, I was actually just in freeze response, was acknowledging and being okay with the need to slow down, because to me, slowing down equaled less achievement or like less success. So how can we like re-pattern or reclaim the idea of success in a way that supports this work?
Yeah, I would first ask myself or ask you to understand how you even learned what success is, right? Like, where did you get that definition that more achievement, you know, all the things mean success, right? And we also have a society where it kind of is a little bit self-reinforcing, but really trying to understand your own narrative and your own story around success first, and understand what is connected to that, where the roots are with that, because then that can give you a better understanding of it. Is it a you definition, or is it
Did I actually choose this, or
exactly? And then I think once you kind of have an understanding there, you can then move to this exploration of your own values. What are your core values right now? And maybe success is one, but why, right? Like, what does that provide you? Does that provide you, you know, a stronger sense of self or financial wealth, which makes you feel safe and secure? Like, trying to understand what success is for you. It's not, success isn't bad necessarily. It's just if we put all of our worth or our belief about ourselves is riding on that, that's when, or perfectionism or, you know, all those things, that's when it starts to get to be like, let's look at this. So yeah, I think understanding your own or where that definition came from and what the story and the narrative around it is, and then also understanding what your values are. Why is it that you want to be successful? What is it providing you? What is it getting you? And then what is a more sustainable way to move towards it, right? We need freaking rest. To do the things that we're doing, right? Restorative rest can be one of the most productive things that you do, but it can just feel really not productive because I think we're told that, we're sold that, the whole thing, the whole hustle culture and all that stuff. But we get to define what it is that we think about it and what it is that we need for where we're at in life, right? Because maybe don't have kids, success is going to look like one thing. And then maybe if you do have kids or you have, you know, dogs or pets or it's people you're taking care of, it might look different, right? So every version of us, it's gonna probably show up differently. Success, evolution is the point. We get at evolving definition.
I love that. Yeah, and just revisiting it, checking in with it. I think that's probably a good thing to build into if someone has like a quarterly review or like a quarterly goal setting or a monthly. Like anytime I feel like you're doing like goal setting or a self audit or things like that, that's probably a good thing to just add to that routine.
Yes, no, totally. And again, the idea of like success too, it's, I just think like the meaning of it is, we all think like my meaning of it is so different than your meaning of it. So really trying to understand like what you're even painting as success and why you want that, I think is just so important. I think we just all just focus on the
We
need to be this way or that way or whatever.
And for me, so much of that was also realizing that like success is more of a feeling than like a look or an outcome. Cause I used to be, the way that I used to conceptualize success was so much about like the achievement or the external piece of it versus what I feel and how I'm experiencing my life. So that was a wild elevation for me. It was like, oh, it's actually more about how my life feels than what it looks like. Yeah.
So much of that. And I do think going back to the roots part, it's like when we realize, say, success is tied to like maybe a belief that like I'm not enough, that's when it's like, oh, there's more work to be done, because it's not really about success. It's about feeling that you're not enough. That you're trying to prove. So that's why I think it's so important to understand what's underneath it, because then it gives you a little bit clearer, you know, thread between why you do what you do or why you're habituated in a certain way or your, you know, tendencies or behaviors or all those things. A little bit more insight. Shed on that.
Yeah. I'm glad you just said the word thread, because I was just thinking, I was like, it's if you start pulling one thread, you're like, oh, it's all one thread. It's all connected. Everything we've talked about today is interconnected. There's so much.
It tends to be. Yes.
Yeah. So for people listening who are, you know, this is really resonating for them, they're like, oh, there's something here. I need more. I want to go deeper. Where do they find you? Where do they get more resources from you? Tell us all the places.
Yes. So I'm actually in the works. I have never done what I'm like creating. But I'm in the works of putting something together around high functioning anxiety and the nervous system, all of the things. So .com would be a good place. And then if you're in the state of California and you're looking for more one hand to hand or a hand holding type of work with therapy, nourishwellnessgroup.com, which is my group practice, would be a good place. And then good old
amazing.
As well.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, thank you so, so much for being here, for your time. This was such just like a powerful, empowering conversation. So we're super grateful for you.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me.
Of course.